Diane, welcome back. We're talking chemtrails with the man tonight, Clifford Carnicom, and for all of you who have been looking up these past 3 years, and at the very least, experiencing that wave of emotion that runs over people, on many emotions, not just one. There is anger, there is certainly anxiety, there is fear, there is rage, there is confusion, there is a feeling of helplessness, there is a whole raft of things that people have described to me, and I have frankly felt myself looking up. I remember the very day when the reality of this hit home, and it really is a profound and life-changing issue. It's not a joke, and we're talking about some of the hard and fast scientific data that Clifford Carnicom has assembled for all of us tonight. Clifford, if you might, for our listeners who just joined us, go back and read that vile EPA response very quickly.
Sure. Jeff.
You can pull that up.
I do have it. And this is just one sentence, which I consider a key and critical sentence out of their response.
Yeah.
The sentence is this, coming from the U.S. EPA. We would like to take this opportunity to inform you that it is not the policy of this Office of EPA to test or otherwise analyze any unsolicited samples of material or matter. Accordingly, we are returning the sample to you under separate cover.
I guess that means if somebody came across what they thought was anthrax, I had good reason to think it was anthrax, you'd send it to the EPA, and they, after a year and a half, they just send it back.
That's right. There is no logic in what has happened whatsoever, and there is no public service as is required.
Nope. Okay, go right ahead, my friend.
Thank you, Jeff. And I see in my typical lagging fashion, I'm through page 1 of 8 on my notes, so I obviously will have to adjust a little bit as we go. But what we were doing was talking about analytical work with the objective being to make an estimate of how much material was in the sky.
And why we can't see as far as we ought to be able to
see. Yes, how much and how big it is. And in summary, there are established relationships between visibility and the amount of particulate matter in the sky. Now, of course, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that is the basic relationship. And there are, by necessity, certain estimates that will be required in order to solve that problem. And that's what my work is about on that particular page. I think it's called Air Quality Data Requires Public Scrutiny. I won't go through the details of the math here, but let me say that what I attempted to do was take what I would call a very conservative approach. In other words, attempting to err on the safe side and be very conservative in my estimate. And I'm doing that deliberately because I truthfully don't want to try and skew the results to give some ridiculous, absurd number. I want a conservative estimate of what is in the sky and to see if it makes sense. Now, here's where some numbers come in, but I'll say it in text or literary form, and then I'll give the numbers. In literary form, what I found was that my estimates of particulate matter in the atmosphere exceed the limits established by the Environmental Protection Agency for atmospheric quality. That's what I found.
Okay.
That my estimates exceeded the maximum values permitted by the EPA. Now, remember, this is analytical work that I'm doing. I don't have the instruments. Every individual will have to go through my reasoning and my process to see whether or not they think it makes sense or not.
Got it.
Just in terms of the numbers, in terms of some comparisons, I did a particular study actually a couple years ago when this issue first started to come up. The number I ended up with at that point was 39 micrograms, just for a point of reference. The EPA limits for what's called 10 micron or less size material is 50. They call it 50 as the reference number.
Uh-huh.
From data from 96 to 98 over a study I did, I found the number being at 39. In 1999, the data I analyzed showed the number at 46. And the estimate that I have arrived at through this very conservative approach, which I will keep reemphasizing, is at 60. So th- this is another stage of accomplishment, which is, again, subject to, you know, cross-examination by all parties of interest. But nevertheless, for the first time, I have a estimate as to the physical amount of material. You're talking mass at this point, actual physical amount of material in the sky. And, you know, there are several factors that affect that process. The color of the haze is a very important one.
Uh-huh.
And you will notice as we talk, there will always be cross-linking between these topics more and more as we go along. And if I'd like to suggest something tonight, if I'm able to get through this material, is that it appears to me that there is a unifying theme that's beginning to develop between the different disciplines that I have been involved studying. And that will lead strongly into the electromagnetic considerations. But, you know, at this point you're saying, okay, you've got some metals there, and you have an estimate of how much of it there is.
Okay.
That's an important step in the process.
Right.
I'm sure that a couple of months elapsed, because a lot of times I'll do my work, I'll think, and then it sits for a while, and then it does associate with something else later on. Many, many months ago, I had encountered a term within scientific studies that caught my interest because it appeared to be relevant, and that was one of a plasma. And I suspect we mentioned the subject at one point in our earlier interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is one begins to study a plasma is that it becomes less and less esoteric the more I study it. Plasma is an ionized gas, is what it is. It's electrically neutral over a large area, but not electrically neutral on a local scale.
Okay.
It is a gas which is ionized, which has charged particles in it.
Right.
It's not esoteric. Actually, something like 99% plus of the universe is actually a plasma state. The Earth is an anomaly in a universal sense, in that most of the universe is this ionized gas. The Earth is more dense and, you know, doesn't qualify.
Uh-huh.
But plasma is a very real thing. You can think of it as an electrically conductive gas. Simplest visual physical example I can give people would be that of a neon light tube, a fluorescent light tube. That is a gas. Which has electric current sent through it and causes a physical and chemical reaction producing light. So it's a very physical thing. It's not just a Star Trek term. The more and more I study, the more and more I've come to accept it and finally start to get used to it, that this state of matter, it's actually considered like the fourth state of matter, is actually dominant. It's just that we haven't been particularly schooled or trained in it, in our solid liquid gas teaching. So this term surfaces again in my studies because the situation seems to fit. In other words, I have metals in the sky, and those metals have been seen by certain lighting techniques also.
Sure.
You can see that it's there. The material also had very interesting behavior, which we mentioned earlier. It appeared to be ionized. It was very erratic behavior. It was not linear in its motion at all. It appeared to be electrically charged.
Right.
And so the term comes up again, the study comes up again. And what's different now is that when you have an estimate of how much material is in the sky, you can begin to analyze that from a plasma point of view. If you assume that there is a gas, if you assume that there are particulates in that gas,
uh-huh.
and if you
uh-huh.
assume that those particulates are of an electrically conductive nature, which is the state of affairs, you now have the essence, the foundation of a plasma.
We have turned the atmosphere into, however diluted it might be, certainly a rudimentary form of plasma.
It appears to me that I cannot avoid that conclusion no matter where I go. Again, I did not I did not drive towards it.
You didn't go looking for it. I understand.
And the same thing happened with HARP, as we were talked about HARP. And these things, you're going to see that they start cross-linking no matter where we go. and they all start to begin to tie together. And so follow
these all the way back to Bernard Eastland's patents, can't we?
Exactly. Exactly. And the connections become stronger and stronger the more I go into this.
Okay, now, all of you, if this sounds a little complicated, it's not. Stay right with us. We're going to pause and come back. Just imagine that the atmosphere is slowly being reworked into a weak but certainly usable and viable plasma. And why would somebody want to do that? Well, we have potential answers coming up and much more with Clifford Carnicom after this. Carnicom, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M, Carnicom.com is the place to start when you want to try and figure out what those big white things are up in the sky above your head. Of course, now that winter is here, storm systems are moving through. There are reports of heavy spraying in advance of systems. There are reports of people getting a break in the clouds and looking up, and they're still there. I do remember in the area I am located that spraying stopped. I wrote the date down. It was July 16, 17. They stopped, and they didn't spray a single day for nearly 3.5 weeks thereafter. And then it started up again. And all during this time, of course, the weather never changed. Nothing changed up there. All right, Clifford, let's go ahead. We're talking about some fascinating things for you latecomers. Clifford has been able to ascertain there is metal in the sky. There are elements up there, metals, tiny pieces of metals down to 2 microns, which apparently are behaving in a fashion that would indicate they have been in some way electrified, if you will. And we're talking about a rudimentary plasma that our atmosphere is now appearing to represent. Go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you, Jeff. That would be one of my strong suggestions for the evening, is that each of us begin to educate ourselves on what a plasma is, on that state of matter. How you characterize it, how is a plasma characterized, and that's part of what I'll try to talk to about tonight, and then also how is it used, whether it's applications, and what is it good for.
Now, this is the kicker, folks, so don't lose this. What is it used for, and why would somebody want to do that?
Okay, this, right, and I would only encourage people, you know, not to be intimidated by the subject, and, you know, I dig out the physics books myself. It's important to get to the core, to get an understanding of things.
Sure.
And the math is simply a tool to try and help quantify.
Of course, when we get to the punchline, we have to not for a moment leave anybody who has been made ill by this behind. That's not what we're about here. People are being sickened, probably by the millions for the last 3 years, and I suggest that there have been more than a few who have died due to complications of upper respiratory and other issues that have been spawned by these metals that are in the atmosphere now. But again, it's a layperson's endeavor. We will get no support from our alleged government. So, all right, carry on.
Thank you. And again, I will also keep drawing attention to try to, or the audience, they'll try to draw these connections, which I know they're actually very good at. There's a lot of people doing a lot of good research, actually, and that's hopefully what I can partly accomplish, is to set some potential directions that people can dig into that do have the appropriate knowledge and skills. You can spend a lifetime studying Maxwell's equations alone, which are the foundation of electromagnetics. I don't profess to have devoted my entire life to that subject by any means, but the need for it is actually there at a professional level to dig into this stuff. And also, just to continue to make this plasma real, you know, down at the store the other day, I see now they have plasma television sets. So this is a very real thing that is will be increasingly around us, probably in terms of exposure as we have learned more about it. And
plasma physics, and where there's money to be made, friends, capitalism rushes to fill the void, and plasma physics is coming home to our homes, and you watch and wait and see.
Exactly, and I suspect we will learn that we're surrounded by it. Okay, so you have this thing called a plasma, and then the next part is, well, how do you determine what it is? How do you figure out what it is? And what is it? Maybe I didn't really explain what it is properly. We know what a plasma is. There is this entity next that is called the plasma frequency. Now, the best characterization that I have of the plasma frequency is it can be considered what would be called the natural resonance of the plasma. You know, everything in the world resonates at a frequency. Whether it's the opera singer with the glass, whether it's a mycoplasma, whether it's the earth with the Schumann resonance, everything resonates.
Mm-hmm.
And a plasma has a resonant frequency.
It varies, or is it pretty much stable?
I think in the end it's probably a very complicated variable quantity in the end.
Okay.
Because things are always changing in a plasma state. Plasmas, there's no doubt about it. You know, plasma physics is advanced physics. I can only begin to get my conceptual understanding and then dig into it to the level I can. But you have whole agencies that do nothing but study plasma physics. You don't do that unless you have a very complex entity that you're dealing with. So,
right.
No, I wouldn't say it's constant, but part of my work is, and part of my work in general, is to come up with estimates that are reasonable and make sense to give you a starting point.
Okay. Oh, even that starting point, once in hand, certainly has to be put on the table with manipulation. Malleability. Can plasma vibrational frequencies be changed, controlled? And the answer is probably yes, but we'll see what happens. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the answer to that will be undoubtedly yes, that there is a great deal of manipulation. In fact, that's a whole science in itself. But in terms of what I'm after of coming up with this estimate, this thing called a plasma frequency, how do I go about getting a handle on this thing? And how do I relate it to my world around me? And if you start studying a plasma frequency and you dig into the math of it, you'll, you know, find varying equations and such. And in the end, what are you led to? You are led to the fact that the plasma frequency is a direct function of the amount, the number of electrons in that gas.
Okay, all right, let's hold it right there. The plasma frequency is a direct function of the number, the amount, the density, the concentration of electrons in that gas, i.e., our atmosphere. Okay, hold that thought, and we'll continue in just a minute. Okay, we're right back with Clifford Carnicom talking about what's up there. Up there, heck, what's in our lungs? Well, let's be realistic about this. Go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And I wanted to thank you again for your assistance that you always provide in helping to make these concepts understandable in ways that I may not be able to. I just appreciate that a lot.
Oh.
And if you have any questions or you think that I'm missing something, or because you catch me several times on things that can be explained further. So don't hesitate if that comes up. I'll do the best job I can.
Sure, no problem at all.
Explaining this.
Go ahead.
But where we were at was that we had established that this entity called the plasma frequency, which can be considered a natural resonance of this electrically charged, ionized, gaseous state. This plasma frequency is directly related to the number of free electrons within that gas. Now, don't want to lose folks, because what I'm after tonight is making connections. And when I say free electrons, now I threw a new term in there, but the connection that I'm going to suggest to you exists, because it does. There's going to be a connection between those number of free electrons and that amount of particulate matter that we said we know is up there. So that's a real important connection that's going to take place here.
All right.
If you know how much material is within that gas, you can make a reasonable estimate of the number of free electrons that are in that same gas.
All right.
And that comes from several sources. I'll recommend this fellow named Feynman, which I suppose a lot of people have heard about. The guy is great in his physics books. He came out of the 60s. I guess he worked on the nuclear project quite a bit. The guy writes just clear as can be. He's very helpful.
Okay.
From more than one source, it appears to be a rather a customary assumption to make that every atom of a metallic material has one free electron available. This is what he, as well as other sources, have stated.
Hmm.
So you can start to make a direct connection and estimate of the number of free electrons that exist in relation to the amount of metallic material that is there.
Right. Okay.
So now that's another step, and that's an important one, because now if you have that estimate, you should be able to come up with an estimate for this plasma frequency of this altered atmospheric state that we find ourselves in. In addition, if you are correct in your analysis and you understand what's going on, you also ought to be able to arrive at the plasma frequency for the ionosphere, since we know some things about the ionosphere. It's been studied in great detail.
Yeah.
And that's a part of what I did. That's how I tried to cross-check my work. And I started out by looking at the ionosphere to find out, well, how many free electrons are there up there? What is this plasma frequency? And all I can say is I've arrived at all these numbers. I've done the work. And I end up with a value that agrees quite nicely with what all the sources are saying is a reasonable estimate of the plasma frequency for the ionosphere. And that value, just out of curiosity, on the one I came up with is about 3 megahertz, which is in the radio wave band.
Yeah.
Actually, as you can see, fits quite nicely into the whole discovery that radio waves reflect off of the ionosphere.
Yeah, up and down. They bounce around the globe. Yeah.
That's an important characteristic of this. And so the numbers made sense when I start to look at the ionosphere. I'd like to read this short statement by Feynman to further clarify what is important about a plasma, especially this plasma frequency. This, I think, is a very helpful statement. Feynman says, "This natural resonance of a plasma has some interesting effects. For example, if one tries to propagate a radio wave through the ionosphere, one finds that it can penetrate only if its frequency is higher than the plasma frequency. Otherwise, the signal is reflected back. We must use high frequencies if we wish to communicate with a satellite in space. On the other hand, if we wish to communicate with a radio station beyond the horizon, we must use frequencies lower than the plasma frequency so that the signal will be reflected back to Earth." This is obviously a very important interpretation and application of the plasma frequency, because it's saying, once you know what the plasma frequency is, you can then characterize how electromagnetic energy is going to behave when it is sent through that medium. And what he's saying is that you have this critical threshold, and that if you're putting more energy into it than that threshold, you punch right through it. And in terms of ionosphere, it just goes right on through into space. But if it's at that point or less than that point, mm-hmm. then it has the behavior of either being reflected mm-hmm. or propagated or conducted through that medium.
Okay, propagated or conducted through the medium. Now, this is the ionosphere we're talking about, and many of you are saying, aha, we've heard something like this before when Jeff has had guests on talking about the HARP program, which is intended to pump up mass amounts of energy into the ionosphere, which propagate and change the ionosphere into a tool, as it were. We'll follow up with more as we continue. Headed toward a break right now, Clifford Carnicom has done some masterful work. I've got another email from George. We'll read that, Clifford, when we come right back in just a minute. I'm Jeff Rentz, talking about very important things, things that would probably not surprise Nikola Tesla at all, but would come as a surprise to Mr. and Mrs. America if they were to realize or be confronted with the data that would indicate that our atmosphere is being turned into a large tool for what? For military? For defense? For mass control of one sort or another? Good guesses. We'll talk to Clifford more as we continue. Okay, welcome back. Another follow-up email here, as I mentioned, from George. Thank you again, George. He says, hi, Jeff. I am a certified plasma cutting / welding equipment technician with the Thermal Dynamics Corporation with many years' experience with plasma generation devices. Mr. Carnicom is quite right. Plasma is, quote, the fourth state of matter, end quote, and has been harnessed by companies like Thermal Dynamics to cut and weld anything which is electrically conductive. Electrical conductivity is the key. One of the hallmarks of plasma equipment is its ability, considered a drawback, to generate extremely powerful EMR fields around the plasma stream. It is so powerful that at a distance of 1,000 feet, a 70-amp plasma torch can completely block out TV and radio signals. It is one of the reasons that this equipment is not sold for home use. You would wipe out the TV reception in an entire neighborhood. And he goes on, there is more. Let me finish up. Are you there, Clifford?
I certainly am.
Okay, I heard another big squeak on the line. I wanted to be sure our connection was still up. He finishes up by saying, the temperature and frequency of the plasma can be easily modulated by varying the gases used to generate the plasma. We have used argon, carbon dioxide, and even dry, dehydrated normal air. And by convarying the amperage and voltage applied to the plasma stream. So you see the malleability here. It's extraordinary. One guess, says George, I have as to why the atmosphere would be being primed for plasma applications is that it would be very simple to selectively prevent the use of specific frequencies for radio communication, EMR. Doing this would be relatively simple if you were able to pump enough energy into the atmosphere. Installations such as HARP could theoretically provide this sort of energy requirement. That from George.
You're getting some great feedback tonight, Jeff, and you can tell that there are some real thinking and knowledgeable people out there
who appreciate what you're doing, I might add, very much.
Thank you, and you know, my hope is that these knowledgeable people come to the forefront and act in the public welfare to expose and disclose those activities which have and are taking place without the participation of the American public. And it's good to know that there are people that are taking the issue seriously as it should be, and hopefully will be inspired to take action as well. So I really appreciate some of the feedback that you're getting.
Good. Well, it's underscoring what you're doing perfectly.
In continuation of this discussion, you know, I've tried to characterize what a plasma is and how you arrive at it, what its physical interpretation is in terms of resonance.
We might also add, Clifford, if I might interject here, that this atmospheric manipulation, again, the general thrust of where we're going is that it has been a project, a deployed project for the last 3+ years now, the application to the atmosphere of apparently what may be very, very tiny micron-sized pieces of charged metal and so forth, or that would become charged with the proper application of enough energy pumped up into the ionosphere.
That's right. And actually, the ionization, that was another study that had come forth some time ago, and we also had talked about that the energy from the sun itself is sufficient to ionize certain metals, and those metals are candidates that we're speaking of. So in the ultraviolet light portion of the spectrum, and even actually part of the visible spectrum, there is ionization of metals that can take place. So we may have, a source of energy for a portion of operations, even in the ambient atmosphere. What I have done is extend the same methods, mathematics and reasoning, that I applied to the ionosphere study to an examination of the lower atmosphere in its what I call altered state. And this means that I have arrived at an estimate for the number of free electrons that are expected to exist within this modified lower atmosphere. And I have attempted to the best of my ability to make an estimate of the corresponding plasma frequency for that state. And bear in mind, in terms of connections, there's a pretty strong one that goes on with this, because this starts with visibility studies. Then it leads to mass estimates. And then mass estimates lead to free electron estimates. Free electron estimates lead to plasma frequency estimates. And that's where I'm at right now. And my work in that regard, again, leads to a number, again, subject to cross-examination. But I end up at a number, and where that number is at the upper end of radio waves. Actually, radar is where I end up.
Huh.
Okay? Right. And bear in mind, it's an estimate. It's the best I can do, but it's an important estimate. Because a part of this is, part of what's happened before is, even though there may have been general conceptions about electromagnetic energy, you want to know where to put your effort. You don't want to be tracing down gamma rays and X-rays if that doesn't seem to be the primary target. And there's a huge difference. The electromagnetic spectrum is very important to become familiar with as we study this, because we want to know where to put our energy, no pun intended, to understand what is going on. And so this is a threshold. That plasma is a threshold frequency that is an important one to attempt to identify as best we can. Uh-huh. And what I'm saying at this point in my research, that point that I end up at is in, you could call it the upper limit of radar. You have radio waves, then you have radar, and then you have microwave, and then you have visible light.
Okay.
And then you go up into the high stuff, gamma rays and all this type of stuff.
So it's sitting right at the top of radar. All right.
Yes, I'm speaking of a limit, at the upper end of radar. And, consider leeway. It's hardly exact what's going on here.
Sure.
So don't rule out microwave frequencies by any means. In fact, there are some interesting observations that I've made over time that, suggest we might be in that borderline area.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that this is a point that I end up, and it's an important threshold to identify because it then now opens up the question of interpretation and application in a more specific way than just to say, generally, hey, they must be doing something about sending energy.
Mm-hmm.
This threshold is important in the sense of propagation and or reflection, as we described earlier. And so the conclusion that I would draw from this, if the analysis is correct, which I will always qualify myself, if the analysis is correct, then the interpretation is that you now have a medium in the lower atmosphere, now close to the Earth instead of 60 miles up in the sky, that is potentially beneficial to the propagation, the conduction, the transmission, reflection, let's call it modification and control of electromagnetic energy at the radar level and below. And that's a real important part to stress here, is even though you have a threshold value, that means everything below that and up to that point has many, many possibilities for applications.
Many.
So don't think of it just as a plasma frequency, oh, it either reflects or it doesn't reflect.
Mm.
As we talked, as your person wrote to you, I will speak about modulation soon.
Yeah.
And you enter a whole range of considerations of use and control of frequencies below that point, say in the radio waves and such, up through and including radar and or microwave.
Keep in mind also that some of the frequencies in the radio wave spectrum have certainly been demonstrated already to have sometimes profound effects on living organisms. Keep in mind also another image here, the ionosphere 60 miles high, has somehow, through the possible and apparent spraying of something, been either extended all the way down, or a second ionosphere, if you will, has been created at a much lower level to deal with whatever issues the folks doing all this are intending to deal with. This is, again, a technology that has been around for probably 100 years, conceptually, through the sheer peerless genius of Nikola Tesla, and is being implemented now as we speak. We've got about a minute until the break, Clifford.
Yeah, that's probably a good breaking point. You're very helpful at your conceptual interpretations and relays to people in terms of what's happening. And I think you very well describe the general content of what, in a large conceptual way, of what it is I'm trying to relay. And I think you've hit it exactly right on the head.
Good.
At this point so far.
Good. All right. Well, and again, on Clifford's website at carnicom.com, you can read for yourself at your leisure the works of Bernard Eastland as they may apply to this. We are going during our next hour to look into some very dark and potentially dangerous corners for the future of all of us in terms of mass mind control, mass health control, owning the weather, which is the avowed goal of the Air Force by the year 2025 or sooner, and certainly environmental and climatological manipulations, which many feel are going on now and have been going on for several years at least. Lots of things. When you turn the atmosphere of this planet into your blackboard, into your tool, into your mechanism, and have at your disposal literally hundreds, maybe thousands of potential applications, it is a little disconcerting to think of who might have that kind of control over our atmosphere. Okay, we'll pause and ruminate, cogitate, and come right back to continue our discussion with Clifford Carnicom.